thank the readers, and let's give a warm welcome to our warm-up speaker, Scotty.
Thank you, Rick. My name is Scotty Dean, and I am an alcoholic. And thanks for allowing us to come over and speak tonight over here. You know, I never know where to start, and I'm always a little bit nervous. And then once I get rolling, you probably can't shut me up. You know, but, you know, I got thinking, you know, Scotty B is, and the B is for Butler. And when I got here, I was just Scott, but there was about five other Scotts. I mean, there's a lot of Mikes and things like that, but there wasn't a lot of Scotts. And today, out of those five, there's two of us that I know still sober, and one that shows up on his birthday primarily, you know, and here and there. But that attests to, if you keep coming back, you have a shot at this program, and if you don't, you may not stick around. But, you know, I got here, and I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. I went into a facility because I had some other issues, and remember, I went in this facility January 23rd, 1989. And that was my brother's birthday. And I would have gone sooner, but the Super Bowl was that Sunday. And I knew I was going to go in the facility, but I had to wait for the Super Bowl because I knew that was the day of party. I didn't necessarily like the teams that were playing, but that was the day of the party. That's, you know, that was what the Super Bowl event was all about. So I was in that facility, and I celebrated my 24th birthday in there. And I thought, you know, I'm too young to be here. I just need a break. And I went to my first AA meeting in there, and I heard some people talk, and the information was foreign to me. I didn't understand a thing. I just know there was a couple strong personalities in there that are still around today. And I thought, you know what? If that's how you guys are, I will never come back here. And here I am today. I'm still here. But, you know, when I got here, I didn't think I was an alcoholic because I just, you know, I was just a partier. I went to high school, I drank, I partied. That's what we did. It wasn't until later on when I realized that my social life was different than normal people. And I just didn't party like everybody else. I stayed up for days at a time. You know, my wife would ask me where the car is, and I would say it's in the driveway, and she'd say, no, it's not. And I was sure it was there, so then when she asked me where it was, I had no idea. You know, most people don't lose their cars after a night of partying and have no idea where they were, where it was. You know, I had a job for about 10 years, and my son was born. I called the insurance company, and they paid for the bill. And I just quit going to work. I didn't call in, and my buddy came by the next day and said, hey, you didn't show up, so they just put you on a week's vacation. And I thought that's what they did. I was like, thanks. And I go back to this job a week later and tell them, hey, I heard I was on vacation. Here I am. Thinking they were going to be happy to see me. And they said, let's sit down and talk about things. And then they gave me an option. I could quit on good terms, or they were going to let me go. And I couldn't understand why, because after I told them my reason for being off a week, how I had to go down south and save my brother because he had some serious alcohol problems and other issues, and get him out of jail and help him save his marriage because his wife was leaving him, I couldn't understand how they were going to let me go. You know, and I just thought this was normal behavior for a long, long time. Then I ended up in Fresno. And I ended up living in places that I'd never lived before. I rarely went out of the house. I lived with two other guys, and it was a weird roommate situation. We were all alcoholics, and we just didn't talk to each other. You know, we had we all worked together at the same facility. And we just sat there and stared at each other all the time because we were pretty much just drunk and wasted. We had nothing else going on. And you know, I had this, I just had this feeling inside that my life was going nowhere. You know, I didn't like the way I was living, and I didn't like what was going on, you know, with my financial situation. I was married at the time. I had three children. I rarely saw them because I was busy. I was lying, and I was cheating, and I was hawking Christmas gifts. You know, they were hawked here, and then when I got Christmas gifts, I would go take them back to the stores and get money. It used to be much easier. You used to not need a receipt for anything. You know, they would look on their shelf, and if it had a dollar amount, they would just give your money back. And I was grateful for that. And, you know, I lived that way for a while. And I realized that this was not the path that I wanted. I was just real lonely. I was real hollow inside. And I didn't know that at the time. I just knew this wasn't how I was supposed to live. It wasn't until later that I realized what those feelings were. So I decided I needed to go into this this facility. And I had no intention of quitting the alcohol. I just wanted a break. I figured that they would let me rest and I'd be okay, and then once I was well, I could start all over. Well, I went through this facility and started going to AA meetings. And I got me a sponsor like everybody suggested. And as I say, I got me a sponsor like everybody suggested. And that's basically what I was doing. If you told me the suggestion, I would do it. Because it was all about my look good, not about becoming sober. But every time my sponsor got to know me, I would quit talking to him. Because I was still very, very lonely for a long, long time in this program. And I share this because, you know, I relapsed two or three times on alcohol. And I don't necessarily say I relapsed because I wasn't really working the steps. And today I look at, to relapse, you really need to be in a program of recovery first. I just stopped drinking for a long time in this fellowship. And my look good was more important than how I felt. Then I reached this point about 7 years sober where I no longer liked the way I felt at all. I reached the point of saying, you know, it doesn't matter how anybody else looks upon me. I need to worry about my sobriety. And what brought this on was, and I'll share this briefly, you know, I was 7 years sober, and I was sponsoring people, and I was sharing the program, and I was sitting out in the bushes with my ex-wife with a hatchet, a machete, thinking, this is sobriety, you know. And, you know, to me that made sense, because I owned things, you know, primarily, you know, another person, and that was my higher power for a long time. So I finally reached that point that they talk about in here, incomprehensible demoralization. And for me it happened without alcohol. And I got a sponsor. You know, I got another sponsor, I should say. This is about probably my sixth sponsor. I finally got a sponsor I was willing to open up and share with and get honest, as they talk about in this program. And something happened. You know, they talk about the miracles of AA. Something happened. The miracle happened. For a long time, I had a hard time with a higher power in this fellowship. You know, people used to say, oh, try the cigarette pack, try the doorknob. None of those worked for me. You know, but I gave them a shot. And I was real agnostic because, you know, my first drink was my 8th grade graduation from parochial school. So being I had that good church upbringing, when I got there, I was very, very agnostic. So finally I walked into a room, and some buddies of mine, they told me, you know what, we're all from different denominations. We all have different religious backgrounds. So amongst us, we're just going to consider God as love. And you know, for me, that was what I needed that day. And ever since then, I have no longer needed to search out a power greater than myself that it talks about. To me, that was a miracle happening for me. You know, I realized that, yeah, that's, you know, To me, that says it all. God is love. To me, that says it all. That's what God should be. And that helped me in my process through the steps, because one of my biggest fears was nobody would love me. You know, if I didn't act a certain way or behave a certain way or drink a certain way, nobody would love me. I would be rejected. And by God, I didn't want to be rejected. Because then where would I be? You know, where would I go and what would I do? So, you know, I got the sponsor and I found God and I started working the steps again. And when I first came around, there used to be a guy from Exeter, Roy B., and he used to kind of stand up, not quite stand up at the table, but he would sit there, you know, just kind of get out of his chair a little bit, reach across the table, and he would spit, work the steps or die. And, you know, there was this fierce look about him. And today I understand that, you know. Today I understand work the steps or die. It's not necessarily a physical death. It's the death that I had before I got here, the death that I had those first 7 or 8 years in here, when I was just still lonely and I still had a big void in here. But once I started working those steps and taking a serious look at myself, my life has changed dramatically. You know, and what I say about that is my life inside has changed dramatically. The way I feel about me, the way I feel about other people today has changed dramatically. I mean, the outside of my life has changed dramatically too. You know, and I just got a short time, so try not to bounce around but fit it all in, but I feel it's important to share where I came from on the physical sense and where I'm going, because when I got here, I had nothing. You know, I had no job. My first job was a minute mark. The job I had before I got here was up in Fresno at a used car sales lot, and they fired me like 3 times before they wouldn't hire me back anymore. They said, "We're done with you." And like I said, before that, you know, I had a senior job with some stability, and when I got here, I had become what they talk about, unemployable. You know, all those pink notices in the mail. I couldn't pay my bills. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I came in here and I gave it a shot. And miracles have happened to me. And I've seen countless miracles happen to other people. You know, I got a job and I've been there about 18 years, I guess, 19 years with the county. And sometimes I sit there and say, you know, I can't believe they hired me. And when I was 17, I was naturally a high school dropout. Well, they asked me to leave. So, to me, that's kind of a dropout. So I was going to go in the Marines at 17. And I woke up at 4:45 to go get on that bus and ride up to Fresno and go to mess and swear in. And I woke up at 4:45, sat on the edge of the bed for about 5 minutes, and started thinking, because that's what I did. And I thought, you know what? These guys are going to tell me what to do. They're going to demand I do things, and I'll probably tell them, screw off, and I'll probably end up in the brig. So I went back to bed. And I got a call from this gunny sergeant that said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm not coming." And I was still young then, so I let him yell at me for about 5 to 7 minutes on the phone before I hung up. And I didn't go. So I just kind of meandered through life and got married and had children. And then when I was about 30 years old, I tried to go again, and it was difficult. So I came into the Navy Reserves. And through that process 15 years ago, I got to serve about 15 years, seven and a half years on active duty. Some things that I've always wanted to do. In fact, I just got back from Korea last night and had been over there for about the last 7 weeks. And it was interesting. I did go to meetings over there, and I didn't know what to expect my first meeting. And I found nothing but Americans in there. You know? And it was just like a meeting, you know, around here. The format was a little bit different, but it was just like meetings around here. You know, out of that, I spent 3 years in Virginia, and meetings were just like they are here. other than a little bit different format. And no matter where I've gone, I've always found AA. And wherever I found AA, I found people just like me. And no matter where I've been, it's like it's the same revolving door. You see people come in and you see people go out. But as I mentioned, I came in January 23rd, 1989, so that was like 23 years ago. But my birthday's in 91 because, you know, I didn't work the steps. And I didn't take the suggestions that people gave me. And my time's about up, so I just want to say, you know, at the beginning, you know, I mentioned my name, you know, Scotty B. Scott Buecher, and I say that today because a couple years ago I went to a convention, and the speaker was from the Midwest, and she said, I don't think we are meant to be anonymous from each other. And to me, that fits well. You know, and something, and I've heard people mention it also in the past. I mean, you know, you go in the hospital, I'll never find you because I only know your first name. You know, how am I going to go visit you? Or how am I going to, I don't know anybody's last name. You know, unless I've spoken to somebody. And the other thing, I wouldn't have felt that way 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But today, I don't have anything to be afraid of anymore. I just don't have to be afraid of anything. You know, I pay my bills, and if I can't pay them, I make a phone call. You know, it's ironic where I've been and where I'm at today. You know, I mean, and every time I think about that, it's like, wow, you know, that I deserve the life I have today, you know, because all I did was show up and come to AA. That's all I had to do. And work the steps and get a sponsor and allow you to get to know me. That's all it took for me to have this life. So anyway, that's all I got. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Scotty. That was fabulous. And thank you. Yeah, we're all in for a treat. And I'm going to go right to it and introduce our main speaker, Laura from Springville.
Thank you, Rich. My name is Laura N., and my sobriety date is August 10th, 2006. And,
Hi, Laura.
I'm from Springville. One of the reasons I drank, is because I felt uncomfortable. I felt like you weren't going to like me, and I wasn't going to be able to look you in the eye, and I wasn't going to be able to be what you wanted me to be. And so it was so much more easier for me to drink. Right now, if I had to drink, I'd be really comfortable. Because, when you're in a comfortable situation, it just seems to loosen the tension. But one of the things that AA has taught me is I can like myself and I can go through situations and I don't ever have to drink again. And drinking did not solve anything. It masked a lot of problems that I had. And in fact, it made disasters, bigger disasters in my life. I grew up here in Slary and I started drinking here in high school. And I wasn't real popular, I wasn't unpopular, but I had a hard time talking to guys and to girls. And so drinking made me become, in my mind, what I thought I could become, popular, very social, you know, and it really didn't matter what I said or what I did because the alcohol did it all for me and it worked. And alcohol worked for me for a lot of years. It hadn't always turned on me. I went through a couple of marriages, drink a lot, and then I quit drinking. And I wasn't going through blackouts a real lot at that time. But we would go to the bars, and we would go out, and we would have fun, and it would be on the weekend. And so I would get up and go to work the next day, and I wasn't losing anything, and I was holding my job down. And I had to, you know, I was being the responsible person, paying my bills. It was all just fun, you know, we'll go out, get a new dress, go dancing, and meet people. and that was okay, you know. But as it progressed, I had a boyfriend that owned a bar here in Tulare, and I would work until one in the morning where my job was at. I had the same job, and when I got off, I would open the bar up and stay up all night and drink with my friends. And I'm going to mention right now, drugs are part of my story, but I'm not going to talk about them. But the same feelings that I have when I did drugs, I don't know the difference between the feelings and the disasters that I created between that alcohol and drugs. It was the same hopelessness, the same despair, the same craving, the same everything. So I would stay up all night long and drink, and I would be afraid to go out the next morning because I thought I was going to melt in the sun. And my life was just slowly spinning out of control. And so a lot of you guys perform geographic, and I perform marriage. I do that well, you know, and I had two of those already over here in Tulare, so I had a boyfriend that owns a bar here, so I thought I'll go if I stay and get me a husband. And I went to the bar. And the guy that I met there, it was tequila night, dollar tequila night, where it all started to be a day. And he was there for a baseball tournament. He happened to just be there. I happened to kind of like live there when I could. And you know, I was honest with him. I told him, I said, you know, I've got this boyfriend that owns this bar and I can't quit drinking. And if you want to be with me, if you'll marry me and save me, I'll go with you. He agreed to this, you guys. He agreed to it. And so, you know, that's how we started that marriage out. You know, bless his heart, he really tried to stick with me on that. And there would be periods there where I would be able to maintain sobriety. Well, there would be periods where I would be able to maintain on drinking for like a month or two at a time. And we would say, you know, you have a drink for a couple months, so let's go celebrate. And we let them go. So we would go up to Chisholm and go through the wine tasting and everything. And I would black out. And I would not remember what happened. And I would come home and his stuff would be moved out, or his stuff was tore up. And he's like, why are you acting this way? And I'm thinking, God, I wish I wasn't. You know, I wish I knew what that magical part was, where I drank one too many whiskeys or I drank one too many tequilas. You know, I would try to balance it out. You know, well, that tequila be more last time, so I'll go over here to whiskey. And sometimes I would black out, and sometimes I would be perfectly fine. But I never knew which time was going to be which. And there came a time when he said, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I said, well, hell no. I'm not in the gutter. You know, I don't live on Skid Row. I haven't kissed my pants, I know. And I don't care what you said. You're kind of telling those people that lie when I drink anyway. But, you know, you know, we went on a little bit longer, and it lasted for about 4 years. And I've got to tell you, I really loved this guy. I really did. And we went wine tasting on our anniversary, and that was the last time I ever seen him again. And he was just, I'm through. I'm out of here. And that gave me the license to go full tilt into drinking and doing what I wanted. And I had parents that had enough money to enable me, so I really didn't have to worry about paying the bills or losing a house or anything, because they were going to catch me when I was falling. They didn't let me go homeless or any of that. And as my drinking progressed, I had to find people that drank like I did, that went day and night. You know, my friends that went out with me on the weekends and went dancing, well, you know, they weren't gonna hang around with somebody like me now that drank with hardcore night and day. And when I was up, my whole thoughts revolved around, where am I gonna drink? What am I gonna get to drink? Who am I gonna drink with? Where are we gonna start? Blah, blah, just drink. You know, what am I gonna do? And eventually it came to a point where my parents had to start backing off and letting me go, because I would walk into their house, and in my mind, what looks good in their house looks better in mine. And so I would just take off with it and put it in my house. And it could be their money, it could be their light fixtures, it could be whatever I thought, you know, whatever goes to at my table. That's the insanity of this disease. No, that's not yours. You're imagining it. And I come from a family that if you don't mention it, if you don't acknowledge it, it doesn't exist. So they didn't acknowledge that I had this problem. And if they did happen to mention it, I'd say no, and that would be a problem. So eventually they asked me not to come around their house. And my mom would come to see me and they give me money on the side. My last 2 years of drinking, I hit rock bottom. My mother committed suicide. And that was the person that had always bailed me out. That is one of the secrets that helped bring me down to the bottom that I thought I would never talk about because I blamed myself for it. The last words spoken to my mother were angry words. They were cuss words. And her last words were for me without. And I wish to God it was different, but it's not. I did not kill her, but there's a lot of pain. There's not so much blame anymore. I'm able to deal without drinking. When this happened, I spiraled into living with people that drank and used hard like I did. And in this program, they'll tell you that some people live so others, I mean, some people die so others can live. One of the people I lived with has died that I'm here living. I got in trouble. I got arrested. And I went to jail. And that was not anywhere I'd been before. I didn't do well there. And I'm a whiner. I don't like bling. I hated that orange shit. And I was when they offered to let me out and if I would do a program, I immediately jumped on that. You know, I immediately said, okay, I'll do that. And so they said, well, you've got to sign up, you've got to get on probation, you've got a test, you've got a disease. I was like, let me tell you, that was the last time I ever drank. But as I rolled out the gates of the jail, and the nearest liquor store, we stopped that. I was drinking, you know. I was like, all right, I'm drinking, the party is on. But I did enroll in all this stuff. I enrolled in it, and this is part of the insanity of the disease. In my mind, I'm thinking the judge should be really grateful that I'm not drinking that much. My test is not as high as what it used to be. What I need to maintain. I know it's better, but it's really not. This is what I really need. I thought, you know, if you were me, this is what you need to maintain a lifestyle. He'll, you know, he'll say, hey, that's a big improvement. Well, he didn't see it that way. He didn't see it that way at all. He did. You've turned in over 15 dirty tests. That's more than anybody in the program has ever turned in. I'm going to give you a choice. You can go to prison now for 3 years, or you can go into a home. Now, I knew that I was not going to be able to do prison. And I'm going to tell you, when that happened, there came a point that day that all the hopelessness in my life hit. And it was I lived to drink. The day was not good if I didn't drink. I didn't know any other way to survive anymore without drinking because I spent so many years doing it. Drinking had always worked, so I thought if I drank more, it would get better. It was getting worse. I was now in trouble, getting in more trouble. There was nobody to bail me out. I was afraid to go to this home because I knew there were going to be other girls there that hated me. And I had, and it was a fear of unknown. I had no desire to be sober. I had no desire to go to meetings. I just wanted my life to go back to what it was. I just wanted to be able to take some drinks and have a good time again. I did not want to change. But I did not want to go to prison. So I fell down on my knees and I said, God, help me. I am so scared. And they gave me exactly 6 hours to get my stuff together and go to that home. Now, mind you, I became the supervisor at that home later on. I know they gave other girls a week to go in there. I was like, what the hell is that shit telling you to stick that? Because I knew you would rent. I knew you would rent. And I went in there, and I finally was around sober people after 25 years. All the people I lived with rent, or they dealt with. Nobody else around was sober. So I went in there, and I learned to go to meetings. I learned to get up and make my bed. I learned to say please and thank you. I learned to cook. I learned to show up on time. But mainly I learned to go to four meetings every week, day in, day out, day in, day out. Didn't matter that I didn't understand what you guys were saying. Blah, 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 sponsor. Yeah. And that's about all I heard. But still, it helped me to reach out to you to get a sponsor and you can leave. I was like, oh, I don't want to leave now. I got a bed. I'm a refrigerator. We never had that. All our food went, I mean, all our money went on the alcohol. So I'm not wanting to leave. So I'm like, okay, I'll get this on. And I see this little old lady at the meeting. And she did the cutest little thing, and I thought, ooh, I'm going to pick her because she looks so sweet. She's not going to know what I'm up to. Her name is Cheryl W. She's from Porterville. Her husband was Hal. She had a lot of years.
That's a little Eddie Nazi is what she was.
And I was her last baby. She did. This is how she worked 1, 2, 3 with me within a matter of minutes. You know, she said, do you believe you're an alcoholic? So life is manageable. And she helped me. You know, you might not find your higher powers to believe that I believe right now. But she says, we want to get support to get done. And I'm like, okay. And so she said, you go home, you write down with him. Everybody you have resentment against. I go, really? She goes, yeah. And I thought, okay, so I was waiting to get home. Well, I got a notebook for this. And I would call her and I'd say, can I write down the judge? She goes, oh, you can write down the judge. I'm like, okay. Yeah, can I write down my mom, my dad? Yeah, you can write down all of them. It don't matter. And I wrote them all down. And then she says, okay, the next step is we're going to find out what your part is in. My part? Lord, I don't have a part in this. This is all their fault. And so she would call me once a week and she'd say, did you write down your part? I go, yeah, I'm working on it. She showed up at my house. A couple weeks later, she says, grab that notebook. We're coming to my house and you're sitting at the table till you're done. And we did. The things that I thought I would never tell anybody, and a woman at that, a woman. Now, women I didn't trust, but I was either stealing their boyfriends, or they were stealing my boyfriends, or we were double-crossing each other. You want me to tell my innermost secrets to another woman? Come on! But I did. And, bless her heart, it got me to. It kept me to. Now, she had cancer at the time, and what I learned most from her was that I could be here from another person. My sponsor I have now is here tonight, and I have her ever since then, and she has a sponsor. And she came and she helped me through this because she knew that I felt too guilty to ask somebody else to sponsor me because I have a sponsor, yet she's dying. And I need somebody, because I'm still dating, I'm only 9 months sober, and I need somebody to help me because, you know, I'm just damn taking care of my sponsor now. And she has a lot of the same things that I've been through. And so I was able to be there for Cheryl, and I was able to stay there with her till her last breath, actually. That's the first person I had ever been there for through my whole life. The most important thing this program has given me is honesty. I can look at myself honestly. I can tell you the truth honestly without being hurtful. But mainly I can tell myself the truth. I don't have to hide. I'm a person that would never acknowledge anything that was going on in my life. Things are bad, know they're okay. Things are falling apart, know they're okay. You're a bad person. You know, I mean, I was just never honest with me.
So when I got my next sponsor, I said, let's work on really good and important steps. Yeah. And she was there for me. And when people told me that steps were going to help set me free and keep me sober, I thought, Calvin, she didn't live the life that I did. She haven't went through everything that I did. Those 12 steps are going to keep me sober after 35 years. Just doing that. Well, doing that and being willing and honestly doing it is showing up at meetings. Am I willing? I'm not always willing, you know? I had points where I told my sponsor, and I have this kind of relationship with her where I tell her, I'm not willing to do that. And she goes, okay, live in your misery. I'm like, shit! And I will. I'll stand like that for a couple days and I'll call her and go, oh, what should I do? And then, you know, there's been times when she's given me advice and I've turned around and did the complete opposite. Got my ass in a mess, but I know to call her up and talk to her. Say, look, I'm in a mess. I should have maybe taken your advice. I'm not sure if I can take your advice, but just how do I get out of this mess now? I had an great support group. Two of my girlfriends are here, and I know some of the other girls that are here. And that's really terrific, and guys. I know from other meetings, you know. But I have a wonderful support group, and they say, well, you can tell how well you are by the people you hang out with. And if you're hanging out with people that are partying or working a half-ass program or that are bitching about everybody else in the meeting, well, you're kind of going to get that. If you're hanging out with people that are happy, that are set free, that are going to meet you, well, that's what you're going to get, too. You get those people that have that sparkle in their eye. There's a lot of things that I didn't want to do in this program. They say, oh, AA gave me my life back. Well, I'll tell you what, I never had a life when I drank. I thought I had a life, but I never had a life. AA has given me a new life. It's given me a completely different life. It's given me a way better life than I could have thought. But not every moment of it was wonderful. There's parts that are painful. There's things that we go through that are part of life. But if you're working these steps and you're hanging out with other people, your life evolves. You know, you don't always see it. They say, well, you don't see the changes in yourself. You don't always see it. But your life does change. It changes by doing steps, by working out, by hanging out with sober people. When I first came in here, I hang out with people that were still drinking. And I'm there because I drank with them. It was a good thing to come down. They came up with my 1 year birthday. They set out flyers. They were going to have a party. And my whole thing was I had to get up in front of the whole thing and say, you know what, I drank. But I was able to be honest and give up my flyers. I drink, and I just said, well, I buy beer except for that one drink. And it would have always been like that. It would have always been like that. It would have been one more lie in my life. It's like this program gave me a chance to be honest with myself. And I owe it to myself to have that. Because by being honest, I used to find out things that I like. You know, there's a lot of things that I like. You know, not all of it's bad. Not all of it's hard work on staff. There are things that you're going to find it. You know, I'm with skydiving. I love it. Love it. Kind of think something I've done that I do in life. My sponsor can tell you, but I don't know where to go. But there are things that I've tried, you know, like to ride.
Garden,
yes. Oh, I hate garden. You and Beth, she loves garden. Yeah. I hate that because I went garden. I garden's so relaxing. I'm like, okay, let me go try that. But you know, it gave me a chance upon the things that about myself that I was like. It gave me a chance to myself before I didn't know myself. I was the chameleon in the big book. I could be what you needed me to be because that's how it was. I did not know who I was, but I knew what you might want me to be, and I needed what you had a lot of times, so I had to become that person. I could never just be me. And I liked you most of the time. You know, of course I always have doubts, but you know, I could be 20 years younger. You know, I'm okay. And my friends will tell me I'm okay, and they'll tell me when I'm not. I
was going through something a while back, and there were things that were upsetting me that were happening in my life that were not major disasters, but instead of trying to find solutions to them, I was living in a disaster. And I was loving that drama because, geez, so for 6 years, I don't have as much drama as I used to in my brain. Trying to do that for and then she says, "You're living in the disaster." I go, "I'm what?" She goes, "You're living in the disaster. You're not living in the solution. This is what's going on. Let me show you how to fix this within your solution." And now, what is it? Is your solution for this? And you'll go to some big book studies. You'll hear people there share how they use solutions in their life. You know, you somebody else will always, almost always, have reason for what you do. And some people, you'll see in a room and they'll just shine and you'll think, "I want what they've got." And you'll listen to them talk and you'll hear that they have solutions to this or that. And you'll remember it. And when it happens in your life, you'll use it. If you're new, I suggest you find somebody that shines to you. Somebody that you see that is not like you, but it's somebody like you want to be. That might have something that you want. That's what I did. I went and got graphical with somebody that had something that she was looking at people, she was shaking hands, she was talking, she was having a good time. And I thought, I want to be like that. I want to be free. I want to be free. And it happened, you know, but it didn't happen overnight. I didn't have to have mine. Ooh. Way to go. Deep service force. I am a treasure at the death level meeting. And that keeps me at the meeting. It keeps me there, coming to that same meeting every Thursday. I've been going to that for 3 years now. People know me there. They know if I'm happy or not happy. They know about my life because I keep going to that same meeting. You need to go to the meetings regularly where people can get to know you. You know, it's really good to sit and listen, but if people get to know you, it's like my grandfather says, if you're in the middle of AA, it's real hard to fall out on the edge. Right in the middle. It's just like going to meetings. Even though you don't feel like it. Or if you feel like it, that's really great. Another service that I'm involved in is I'm a waitress up at the Spring Bowl Breakfast. I serve that once a month. And I've done that for 3 or 4 years. I know a lot of these people, like Rick, Holden and them, I know them from the breakfast. You know, they come up there. Things that were stick in my mind are like, keep it simple. I keep this program real simple. There's some people that makes this program harder and that works for them. But there's a lot of things that I just keep real simple, like my higher power. I thank him. I do meditate. I use a book to meditate with because I'm not real good at staying still for minutes at a time, even if I did that at a time. But I use the language of letting go. Prayer is important. It is important to thank. It's important to thank whoever you, somebody other than yourself, for helping you get sober. Keep coming back. They always say that. Keep coming back. Yes, well, that's, you know, it's hard to stay sober if you're not in need, if you're not hearing these things, you know, if you're not where like-minded people like you are. You know, if I go to a normal place and I start asking about my answers about what I did at that point in my marriage and the bar of a normal person, so what the hell? They wouldn't find that funny. Alcoholic, oh, we think that's a riot, you know. Because it's true. And we can relate to it. Coming in here and talking about it is the best therapy in the world. My sponsor and me are still real close, and I still talk to her. Usually, lately, it's been 3 times a week. I'm going through some things, some changes in my life, and I have some major resentments. Well, I have some resentments against a couple people, and I may talk to her about it. and she could, you know, she could see my side. She could see the whole view. And I thought, this is going well. And she says, and I said, you know, this is what I think should happen, this, this, and that. She says, okay. And she says, you know, it's about compromise. And I'm like, yeah. And she says, and I said, what? And she goes, freedom from bondage of self. I go, what? Well, there's in the beginning, there's this story after freedom from bondage of self. This is where we pray for the people that you resent, that they get all the good things in life that you would wish for yourself. Now, do you think I felt like getting all my needs? I think, don't you know, all that good stuff? No. And I told her that before I started. I don't feel like doing that. You had me do this before, and she goes, did it work before? Well, yeah, that was for that situation. This situation, I'm right. She goes, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because you don't have the luxury of holding this in. You don't. You know, I don't. I don't know if you do, but I don't. It'll take me out. That's all I know for a favor. So I'm at that point right now in my recovery where I'm on my knees once again, praying for this, all the good things in life for those people. And then still struggling. You know, it'll get better each day. I'm willing, because I don't want to go back to what I had. What I had is not anything I ever wanted again. It was no kind of life. It was its own private kind of hell. If I go back, I'm sure that I'm going to land in even more trouble, probably in that prison. And things aren't going to get better. And if I drink over a problem, I'm going to drink over anything. And if I drink the problem that I drank over, it's not going to be gone when I get sober. That same problem is still going to be there. And I'll probably make it worse because I'm a blackout drinker. And I usually cause more problems. So I just learned to keep plugging it up and not drink. I'm happy to be in the UA. I'm on fire for it. I'm in love with it. I'm in love with my life. I'm grateful because one alcoholic talking to another, I'm grateful that you showed up. I mean, you know, when the case is going to be about you up here sharing it, and this is what keeps me sober, and that's what keeps you sober, sitting there listening. But there'll come a point where you'll be up here and I'll be just a bit there. Thank God. And I'm just not going to be able to move forward, so I thank you for showing up. Thank you.